Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the latest edition of At the Yard. Alongside Jim Salisbury, I'm Corey Seidman, and we're presented by Deborah Heart and Lung Center. If it's your heart, demand Deborah. Visit demanddeborah.org. A reminder to subscribe and rate At the Yard wherever you listen to podcasts. And on today's show, Jim and I are going to kind of talk about the latest on Bryce Harper and Manny Machado. It's been a pretty hectic few weeks here. There has been the visit the Phillies had in Las Vegas with Bryce Harper. There have been conflicting reports in the national media pertaining to the Phillies' level of interest and ability to land one or both of Harper and Machado. So, Jim, let's start off here. What have you been hearing? What have you been deducing lately as far as the Phillies' interest in these two players? And if you had to kind of handicap things now, is your opinion changed on who the Phillies might land when it comes to Manny Machado versus Bryce Harper?
Well, you know, they have real interest in both guys. And, you know, I don't know that I've ever predicted who they're going to land. I do think they're going to get one of them. I do think that they'd be very disappointed if they came out of this winter not landing one of them. And I think just the way the environment is, it really lines up really well for them to get one of these guys in that there's not a lot of teams on them. And the Phillies have been, you know, gearing and budgeting for this offseason for several years. And their greatest resource, in my opinion, is cash. And these guys are looking for big dollar deals. So I think Phillies are in good shape to get one of them. You know, I've been of the mind all along that Machado is the guy, or the, I would say their preferred, the guy they prefer, baseball-wise. And though they're engaged with both guys, I have seen nothing to kind of take me off that opinion that Machado is their preferred guy. Does that mean they're going to get him? I don't know. Does that mean they could pivot and make Harper the preferred guy? Very possibly. But, you know, I just keep coming back to the fact that I think they've targeted Machado for a couple years now, kind of envisioned him in that lineup, in that infield. They made a strong run to acquire him in July, and he was in for a visit. You know, we make a lot of the visit to Harper. Well, Machado was in Philly for a visit before the Phillies even went to see Harper. So I still think that they would like to land, they prefer to land Manny Machado. And just the way the market is, I think if they're kind of patient and resolute, I think they have a good chance of executing that plan and coming out of this winter maybe with a Machado, a Segura. You move Rhys Hoskins to first base, you add Andrew McCutchen, a really good reliever in David Robertson. You know, you add Machado or Harper, it's a really good offseason with those other complimentary guys.
It sure would be, especially from an offensive standpoint. Jim, I'm pretty surprised by the developments in the Harper and Machado markets. At the beginning of the offseason, we expected many more teams to be in on these guys. And look, there still could be some teams that just have not been publicly identified that are going to go after one of these players, particularly maybe at the end after several teams have kind of sent their offers his way. For example, the Dodgers were thought to be in on Bryce Harper. They've been pretty quiet so far. We expected at the very beginning of the offseason, there was the thought maybe the Cubs would go after one of these players. They're not. The Cardinals added Paul Goldschmidt, which you would think extending Paul Goldschmidt at the end of this year would kind of take them out of the race for one of these extremely high-priced free agents. The Yankees, for example, with Manny Machado, for a while everybody expected that, or most expected, that's where Machado wanted to be, and that's who the Yankees wanted. They've been pretty quiet, and they've made other additions to the infield, DJ LeMahieu, Troy Tulowitzki. They have a crowded situation there. Do you think that some of these teams are actually still quietly in on these players? What are you inferring based on how this offseason has gone? Because there hasn't really been a a strong mystery team push yet, but they're it happens a lot. I mean, I wrote the other day over at NBCSportsPhiladelphia.com just outlining over the last 5 years, there have been five or six superstar players who signed with teams that weren't after them really at any point during the negotiating period publicly.
Yeah, I think there's always the chance of a mystery team. It's just, I think it's difficult to keep those teams secret these days. But I still think that the Dodgers, the Cubs, and the Yankees, those three teams you mentioned, and even the Cardinals, if Machado's number is as low as there was that disputed report this week, the Cardinals, if the number is low, could jump in. But I think the Yankees, Cubs, and Dodgers are all very interested bystanders on either both or one of these guys. I've even heard that on in Harper's case that the Cubs have made it very clear to Harper's representatives that, you know, when you think you're ready to sign and have all your offers there, make sure you check back with us. And there could be other teams wanting to do that, maybe on Manny Machado.
I could totally see the Yankees doing that with Manny Machado. Bring us your number. Bring us your number, and we'll tell you if we can beat it.
Yeah, it makes good business sense, especially if Machado has always had these desires to play for the Yankees. So, if that type of situation, you know, check back with us when you have everything on your plate, and we'll let you know if that qualifies as a mystery team. Yeah, I think there could be mystery teams. Am I surprised there's not more teams? Not really. There's so many teams that are either, you know, not really trying real hard to win, or in transition, or rebuilding. And there's only a handful of teams that really have the money to play in this neighborhood. And the agents, the two high-powered agents for these guys, and the agents have so much invested in this as well. They've made it pretty clear that they're looking to break new ground, and that just, I think, eliminates teams right from the beginning. So, and the Phillies have been there from the beginning, and like I said, I think if they stay the course, they're going to get one of these guys.
The point you just made, it's so true. I mean, you look around the landscape of the league, and there are teams that are either not trying to win in 2019, teams that don't have enough money for Harper and Machado, or both. I'm just going to, right here, rattle off nearly half the league. Orioles, Indians, Tigers, Royals, Twins, Mariners, Rays, Rangers, Blue Jays, Diamondbacks, Reds, Marlins, and Pirates. That's 13 teams that would have no chance. So right off the bat, nearly half the league is eliminated from the running, and that kind of explains why it's been a slow-developing market, at least publicly. Real quick, before we get to the fan questions, because we have a ton of good questions this week that we got from Twitter. Jim, what did you make of that whole ordeal this week with the Manny Machado report from ESPN that the White Sox offer was 7 years, $175 million, and then several hours later, Machado's agent Dan Lozano issued a strongly worded, emphatic statement saying that no, that's not the case, that number is false, and that a lot of the reporting nationally this offseason in regards to his client Manny Machado has been off base. What did you make of that whole situation?
Well, you know, I don't know what's true and what's not true, but, you know, I think if the number was close to what Machado was looking for and he came into the offseason looking for something that began with a three, as in $300 million, I think if it was close to there, we'd be hearing much more talk about a potential destination where it's still, everything seems to be almost pretty close to the starting blocks. So whether or not that number is accurate, I think we can safely surmise that maybe the market in terms of dollars has not escalated to the point where the agent and the player thought it would. And, you know, I mentioned that the teams have to be resolute. Well, I think the player is just digging in as well and staying the course till he can get what he's looking for. I think it lines up well because the Phillies, as I said earlier, they have those resources, and I think they can outbid people, outbid other clubs for one of these guys. So, yeah, it was a crazy scene to see those numbers thrown around. But whether or not they're accurate, I do think that the feel that maybe Machado isn't fielding offers as high as everyone thought he would, I think there is something to that.
Well, just to put this in perspective, 7 years, $175 million, that's $25 million a year, which is the same annual average value that Giancarlo Stanton signed for several years ago in that 13-year, $325 million deal. Machado's the better all-around player. Now, these things aren't linear. It doesn't just mean that because this guy got this amount a couple years ago that a better player is going to get more several years down the line. But I just find it extremely hard to believe that Machado would, A, sign for $25 million a year when he could probably get more, or B, would sign for $175 million when there are already more than a dozen players across baseball who are under contracts of at least $175 million. And quite frankly, Machado's a better player than all of them. The only player that you would say could that comes nearly close to Machado in terms of overall value that is making that much money is Max Scherzer, a pitcher, a guy who plays once every 5 days. So I was just a little confused by that. And my quick reaction to it was just that perhaps the White Sox this offseason were willing to make a offer they deemed competitive that they knew might not work, just so that they could kind of show that their fan base, hey, we're really trying, when in reality it's a lot of money. It's nearly three times more than they've ever paid anybody. But I don't know, $175 million at the beginning of the offseason, if you heard that would have been shocking.
That happens all the time, I believe, that teams make offers that are designed to fail. I think maybe the Washington Nationals reported $300 million offer for Harper in, I guess it was early October, that the Washington Post reported. I think deep down they probably knew that's not going to get Harper done, but, you get it out there, it's designed to fail. It looks like you made an effort. Now, if this market 3 or 4 months later doesn't develop, maybe Harper can go right back there and get that number. We'll see. It is crazy, but, you say, would he sign for the numbers we're talking about? If that's the top dollar, he's eventually going to have to sign it, because I think, from everything I hear, Manny Machado and Harper, they're going to go where the money is. And I still think the Phillies can be the team that makes the best offer, because I think they spent a lot of time gearing for this and studying this, and I think there were legitimate there was a legitimate feel that, the market's going to be, high 200 millions into the 300s possibly. And I think they knew it would end up going there at some point. And if it goes there, I think they can still make that happen. We'll see, though.
Yeah. I mean, the Phillies should be able to, as you said, they've been preparing for this offseason for a while. They've been preparing for a while, I would think, to offer more than $175 million. So if that is the best offer that Machado gets aside from what the Phillies are willing to pay, then I would think that they have a good shot to get him. It's just what matters most to Machado. Does playing in a playing for the White Sox, there will be a whole lot less pressure than there would be playing for the Phillies. But you would think that this guy is ready to, in addition to getting a big payday, ready to play on a big stage, ready to try to win a title, which may not be possible in 2019 with the Phillies, but could be in a few years.
Look, if he's worried about playing under pressure, and he desires to play in a less pressurized environment, I don't want him anyway.
Same.
What does that say about you as an athlete?
Absolutely.
And I have no sense that he doesn't welcome pressure.
Right.
I would bet he's ready after, he did play for some contending teams in Baltimore. Last year was not one of them. But I would think he would embrace the pressure of contending and of a pennant race. What kind of athlete are you if you don't? I know the White Sox traded for his brother-in-law. I don't see that as being a major difference-making type attraction in terms of him picking a destination. I mean,
especially because his brother-in-law is only under contract for this year. So.
Right, and you can see your brother-in-law on Thanksgiving. I mean, this guy wants the money, and the Phillies can do it.
Touché.
So. And, the Phillies front office has a lot of Orioles people that knew him when he was in the Orioles. That's fine for when you see each other for the first time in a long time. Hey, how you been? You know each other. You're comfortable with each other. It ain't going to make it ain't going to be the final determining factor. Money is.
Hey, Jim, just one thing I wanted to mention. I was looking through contracts yesterday when I was looking through all those players that are making $175 million or more. I couldn't believe this when I came across this, but at the end of the 2019 season, at the end of this season, Cole Hamels will be the 14th highest paid player in the history of baseball. Isn't that kind of crazy? I mean, this year he's gonna go past Ryan Howard in career earnings, but kind of just speaks to a guy's longevity. Just want to throw out that
came
random
along.
Fact.
He's a good pitcher. Great point, longevity. He has done a good job, especially for a guy who early in his career was. Battled a back condition, a lower back condition, had an elbow thing. I mean, it's amazing the way he learned his body, learned how to keep it healthy and conditioned, and how he's gone to work on that and done that. And his durability has been really something special, and it's allowed him to have those career earnings along with his consistency. He's a very good pitcher.
No doubt. All right, coming up, Jim and I are going to address all of the questions that we've gotten this week on Twitter. There have been a ton of them. We're going to pick and choose the best ones because, believe it or not, Jim, we actually got some questions that are not about Manny Machado and Bryce Harper. So that's next after this health tip from Deborah Heart and Lung Center.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We're back here on At the Yard, and it's time to get to your questions that we've gotten all throughout this week that Jim and I have seen on Twitter, on Facebook, emails, comments, etc. There are a lot of good ones here, and we're going to start. This one comes from Casey, who wants to know, do we think that ownership and the Phillies front office are aligned as to which of the two big names they truly want between Machado and Harper? As in, do you think that John Middleton's preference is the same as the preference of Matt Klentak and Andy McPhail? Start with you, Jim.
I would say yes. I think John Middleton trusts Andy McPhail and trusts Matt Klentak. And I've always sensed that Machado is the favored player of Matt Klentak, and I still think they trust him to build this team. And I think John is supportive of that. I don't know it for a fact, but that's the vibe I get. So I would say yes.
I would just add to that, you know, John Middleton, to me, just his personality seems a lot more similar to Bryce Harper. Now, that doesn't mean that he wants Harper over Machado, but, you know, if we were just looking at, if these guys were the same player, if they were the exact same player, but Harper had his personality, Machado had his personality, I would think that Middleton kind of aligns more with Harper just because of the hustle, the playing with your hair on fire mentality, the fact that Harper, quite honestly, in my opinion, is more of a draw to a stadium than is Manny Machado. Do you agree with that or not really?
I agree with the draw part. I mean, Harper is a walking kind of show. You know, he's a show within himself. The way he plays, I mean, the reputation, Sports Illustrated, on the cover of Sports Illustrated at the age of 16. I do think he'd come in here and electrify people, sell some T-shirts. But the ultimate way to sell tickets and T-shirts is to win ball games. And I still think the front office believes Manny Machado is a better baseball fit. Because they're trying to improve offensively and defensively, and he can be an elite-level third baseman, an elite-level offensive player. So, you know, ultimately winning is going to be your best drawing card. I agree. Harper's a drawing card, but, you know, we'll see. I think they like them both, to answer Casey's question.
Yeah. Okay, this next one comes from Rob O'Blender on Twitter, who mentions that the new Mets GM, Brody Van Wagenen, has kind of indicated that he thinks the Mets are the class of the NL East based on his comments this week at Jed Lowry's introductory press conference. His comment was, come get us, and he was referring to the Mets division rivals as well as teams like the Dodgers and Cubs. So Rob asks, is this the start of another vicious rivalry between the Phillies and Mets, given that the two teams appear to be ascending?
I hope so. I would remind you, though, the Atlanta Braves are pretty good, and the Washington Nationals have a pretty good rotation, a great third baseman, and who knows if they're going to get Bryce Harper back. So I see four teams kind of vying for this thing. Right now, I think the Phillies might be looking up at a couple of those teams. Now, if they get Machado or Harper, that could change. But, hey, I hope it's a great rivalry with the Mets. We've seen them 19 times, and it's always better when the Mets are good and the Phillies are good at the same time. It was great when the Phillies and the Nationals had those great rivalries, Atlanta and the Phillies. You know, when you see a team 19 times, it can get a little monotonous. But when the teams are good and really vying for something, it becomes a lot of fun to watch. So I hope Van Wagenen is right. I hope he builds a team, a quality team. And he's got some – man, he's got some firepower in that rotation. If those guys stay healthy and put it together, he's going to be right. They're going to have a hell of a run, hell of a team there. And Cano's still got tread on his tire for a couple more years. And they're healthy and productive. They're going to be a good club.
Tell you what, I sure hope it's a rivalry, because the last 7 years, the Mets have pretty much put the Phillies over their knee. It has not been competitive, and the Mets haven't, the last couple years especially, the Mets have not been fielding uber-talented rosters, and yet they still seem to hit three homers a game off the Phillies, especially when they come to Citizens Bank Park. So it might not make that much of a difference that the Mets made all this improvement this offseason, because they had been beating the Phillies with guys like Wilmer Flores and Jeff McNeil and, you know, all these guys that have come through that really haven't been top-notch players. Okay, next question. This comes
from Lucas Duda. It seemed like Lucas Duda always would hit a couple bombs. Yeah, go ahead.
This next one comes from Phillies Fan 1000 on Twitter, who wants to know what we think of the defense in the infield. How much improved will it be, and how much of a difference would Manny Machado make if he's playing third base and it's not Michael Franco in 2018? In 2019, I would just start by saying that, you know, Gene Segura, while he's not a top five defensive shortstop across baseball, I think will be a marked improvement over what the Phillies had at shortstop, especially the first half of last season. And then, everything that comes along with it. If it's Cesar Hernandez at second base, splitting time with Scott Kingery, I think that would be better. What do you think of this? Start with the infield defense now, and then what you think Machado would bring defensively.
If you get Machado and Segura, you're looking at elite level defense on that left side. And a big improvement. And, even without Machado, I think Hoskins has a chance to be a tick above Santana at first. And Segura is going to give you better defense than they got out of shortstop last year. Though Scott Kingery did improve in the second half. He really did. So already I think the defense is inched itself forward in the infield, and it can be significantly better if they get Machado.
Okay, this one comes from Embiid MVP215, who wants to know, if the Phillies miss out on Bryce Harper and Manny Machado, that doomsday scenario, would they go after guys like A.J. Pollock, Craig Kimbrell? What would be the fallback plan if that were to occur? First off, what do you think? And then I'll give my opinion.
Well, I think they're going to get one of those guys, but I would think they would have some, more money to spend, and they might try to build a super bullpen. Maybe Kimbrell is in play. Maybe Keuchel. So I think they would maybe look to do something more in the pitching department if they didn't get one of those guys. And they still might look to do something more in the pitching department, depending upon I think the length of deals that those guys would be looking for.
Right. And, I'm not saying that I don't expect them to get either guy, but I just would point out that if that scenario were to occur, Nolan Arenado is a trade candidate this season. He's a free agent at the end of 2019. The Rockies may not have enough money to keep him. They may decide, especially if they're out of the race, to see what they can get for him at the deadline, kind of like the Orioles did with Manny Machado this past season. And even beyond Arenado, these are the potential free agents after 2019. Jose Abreu, Xander Bogaerts, Josh Donaldson, Paul Goldschmidt, Marcell Ozuna, Anthony Rendon, and then you have pitchers like Garrett Cole, Chris Sale, Justin Verlander, Zach Wheeler. So there are ways to improve if that doomsday scenario occurs. That kind of ties into our next question. This comes from Kale on Twitter, who's asking, is the only way the Phillies would be interested in Keuchel if they also get a guy like Machado? There was a report last week that the Phillies, if they were to get Machado to then thus improve the infield defense even more, then they'd feel more comfortable with a guy like Keuchel because he's an extreme ground baller. He did lead all of Major League Baseball last season in ground ball rate. What's your vibe on the Phillies' interest level in Keuchel with or without Machado?
Well, I think if you were to get him, it would really behoove you to have a really good third baseman defensively, like a Machado. I think they have interest in Keuchel. Because he's been a very good pitcher. He's a left-hander. The swing and miss and the strikeout rate coming down a little bit, and he gives up a lot of contact and a lot of hits, would scare me a little bit in Citizens Bank Park. That said, he keeps the ball on the ground, and a lot of that contact is weak. I do think you would have to look at an acquisition of him hand in hand with improving your defense. And I've heard he's looking 3, 4, 5 years. I don't know if the Phillies want to go that high for him. I would think he'd become more in play at a shorter term.
Yeah, I'm not on board with giving Dallas Keuchel 5 years, especially because, you know, the Phillies did last year sign Jake Arrieta to a 3-year contract, paying him $25 million a year. These are two guys who their success rides on their ground balls. And if you're going to be a ground ball pitcher, you need a really good defense behind you. And we talked about how we think the Phillies infield defense will be a little bit better. But I just worry about having two guys like that on the same staff.
And, you know, another thing they could do if they don't get one of those two big guys is I could see them making a play for Mike Moustakas, who, interestingly enough, is a Scott Boras guy, like Keuchel, like Bryce Harper. I could see them making a play for Moustakas, balance out your lineup a little bit with a left-handed bat. And at that point, you know, you're moving Michael Franco, who, you know, I'm just not sure he's I'm still not convinced they're going to have him this year. So that's something I think that we could keep our eye on as well.
I would say that based on what I've seen and heard, more than half of the Phillies fan base does not think that Mike Moustakas would be an upgrade over Michael Franco. I strongly disagree. I mean, I don't think he's a vast upgrade over Franco. But if you look at the numbers since Franco became a full-time player in the major leagues, Moustakas has been significantly better defensively, and his OPS is between 50 and 60 points higher. So it's not just, you know, a meaningless upgrade. Right there. It's the fact that Moustakas will be a left-handed power bat. He's more consistent over a full season. And outside of that 6-week hot stretch that we saw from Franco in 2018, there just hasn't been enough of that consistency throughout his days with the Phillies. So it will be interesting to see what they do with him.
I always kind of look at, you know, the way a team acts, you know, your actions. And over the last couple of years, there's been two or three occasions where, you know, Michael has kind of gone into a secondary role and they've auditioned other people there. And you don't do that necessarily with guys you intend to build around.
Right. Okay, this next one comes from Tyler, talking about the Phillies' clogged up outfield, which he's referring to it even before the possibility of a Bryce Harper. He wants to know how we see the playing time shaking out between Nick Williams, Odubel Herrera, Andrew McCutchen, Roman Quinn, and Dylan Cousins if he does get any time. First off, Jim, what do you think the opening day outfield would be if there is no Bryce Harper?
Well, I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me. It would not surprise me to see Quinn in center flanked by Herrera in right and McCutchen in left. It also wouldn't surprise me to see Quinn on a corner and Herrera in center field. If Quinn is healthy, has a good spring training, he's going to force his way into that picture, man. He's an exciting guy. It brings a real element that, you know, I don't think this team has, and that speed and that electricity. I think he's a real difference maker in a lineup. He's somebody I'm real eager to see in spring training. So I think opening day outfield could be, without Harper, would be those three in some combination, Herrera, Quinn, and McCutchen. And I could be wrong.
When we saw Roman Quinn play center field late last season, I mean, I just remember watching games with Ricky Pitalico, being here in the content room at NBC Sports Philadelphia, and just how different the team looked when Quinn was playing defense in center field. And one of the reasons I distrust defensive metrics so much, Roman Quinn graded out as like an average or below average defensive center fielder last season, which when I saw that, I'm just thinking, like, what are these metrics looking at? That this guy who has so much range, who has a better arm than Odubel Herrera, how could he grade out average or below? I mean, that was just crazy to me. Okay, Jim, next question comes from Lou Martelli, who's talking about Nick Pivetta's peripheral numbers, how if you look at them last season, strikeouts, walks, home runs allowed, they paint the picture of a pitcher who is better than his ERA indicates. Do you see him taking a step forward this season? Could he be, well, Lou asks, could he be the team's number two starter by year end? Wouldn't that be a sweet payoff for Papelbon? So what do you expect out of what do you expect out of Nick Pivetta in 2019?
I think another number that the team likes is his FIP, which is very encouraging.
Right.
But I see a guy with a ton of talent, and he's an ascending talent. I think, you know, it's funny. I look at that Nick Foles, and I see a guy, in my opinion, why is he kind of had this this effect on and success sort of a little bit later in his career? I think the game slowed down for a guy like Nick Foles. The game slows down for you after you gain some experience. When you have talent and gain some experience, and it allows you to perform better. And I think, I wonder, at least I wonder if the same thing could happen for a guy like Nick Pivetta. As the game slows down for him a little bit more, as he gains more experience, more wisdom, more smarts, he works his way out of more tough situations. I wonder if he has the chance to be a really good pitcher, because the tools are really there. And sometimes I think things start moving in a hurry for him. When things go bad, maybe he doesn't know how to quite stop it. And now as he approaches, you know, his, I think, age 26 season, you know, he's got some experience under his belt. I think he has a chance to really take a step forward because of the talent that some of those periphery numbers, you know, kind of indicate. He's got a big arm, strikes out a whole bunch of batters. I really think there's something there, and I agree with you. What a payoff that would be for Jonathan Papelbon and the Phillies scouts, the Phillies pro scouts who dug down into that system, in the Washington National system, and ID'd Pivetta as a talent worth rolling the dice on.
Pivetta turns 26 on Valentine's Day, so less than a month away from his 26th birthday. Something that I found very interesting, I was looking this up the other day. Nick Pivetta, in his two seasons with the Phillies, he's made 59 starts, so he's pitched 297 innings. In those 297 innings, he has exactly a 3-to-1 strikeout-to-walk ratio, three times more strikeouts than walks. If you look at the last two seasons, all the pitchers in baseball who have a strikeout-to-walk ratio of at least 3-to-1, Pivetta's ERA is by far the highest. And the average ERA of those pitchers is closer to 3.5. He's at 5.33 over that two-year span. You look at something like that, that gives you a better sense, maybe, than his ERA of what he is capable of doing moving forward. Those numbers don't always match up. I mean, there are some guys who nowadays have great strikeout and walk numbers who just never figure it out. But with Nick Pivetta, I do see an arsenal that can be effective. And I think a lot of Phillies fans kind of combine him with Vince Velasquez in terms of the strikeout stuff, the fact that neither has really been able to consistently go deep into games. But if you just look strictly at the numbers, Pivetta has been the more effective pitcher. He goes, you know, he averages more innings per start than Velasquez. His walk rate is, especially last season, was much lower. His strikeout rate was higher. So I wouldn't say that those two are in the same boat. I think Pivetta's a little farther along, and the Phillies just really seem to like him. I mean, if I had to guess, they're going to give him at least an entire season's worth of starts this year to figure it out before they decide to go in any other direction. Whereas with Vince Velasquez, I don't know that they're going to have that much patience. How do you see the Vince Velasquez situation playing out this year?
Well, if they acquire another pitcher, which they very well may, you know, they're on record as saying they'd like another left-hander. You know, then Velasquez could be pitching for his job in spring training. We've always talked about that he could be a weapon at the back end of the bullpen. Pivetta could be a weapon at the back end of the bullpen. So, you know, you need a Velasquez, a Pivetta, Zach Eflin, who's another guy I'm very high on. Somebody's got to separate themselves this year, because if you're a contender, if the Phillies are a contender, I am pretty confident they're going to be out there looking for starting pitching help. If they don't add it, you know, in the next few weeks, they'll be out there looking for starting pitching help during the season. So there's just, with those three guys, there's a lot of talent there, and they kind of get to that age where it's time to really start showing it.
Okay, let's do two more questions. This one comes from Tanya Morris on Twitter, who's asking a question that many, many are curious about. Why is baseball free agency so ridiculously slow? And the next question is it's about, you know, is there a difference between $200 and $250 million, which to the common baseball fan, obviously, maybe it's like, oh, this is enough money. For a player, obviously, you want to get the highest payday. But, Jim, why has this process slowed down so much? I don't remember it being like this 5 years ago. I don't remember it being like this when I was a kid.
It wasn't. I remember, you know, covering baseball for a long time. You could always bank on, you know, busy November and busy December, but January you could really catch your breath and before going to spring training. And now January is just as busy as any other month in terms of free agency. You know, what happened is I just think the agents have really taken control of this thing, and teams are smarter than ever. They know how to deal with these agents, and you get both sides digging in, and it lasts longer than ever. And the field of candidates to sign these teams is shrinking, so teams have maybe fewer and fewer offers, and they wait to drive prices up. There's no deadline like in other sports. There's no salary cap, although sometimes the tax works as a bit of a salary cap. But I think all of that has a lot to do with it, the fact that more and more teams are not playing in the free agent pool. And all of that slows it down. And You know, I think it's something the union really needs to look at because, you know, they want their guys. Is there a difference between 200 and 250 million? Yes, there's a big difference. It's a difference between being, you know, ungodly rich and stupid, filthy rich.
I mean, that's enough money for like another entire generation of one's family. So,
but the next generation of baseball players is looking at that, is looking at you to move the bar and set the bar. So there's that, at least that responsibility, I think, to your union brethren. So, but I think the union has to look at maybe figuring out a way to help speed this up, because you have guys in the middle like AJ Pollock and Moustakas, guys we've mentioned earlier, that kind of get caught in the middle, and they're as much a member of the union as well. So I think it's something, you know, the free agency has almost become like the game, very plodding, it's slowed down,
and so
and
true.
It's really a chore to. A chore to watch. It used to be the offseason was exciting. It's become a chore.
Yeah, and then you compare it to the other off seasons. In the NBA, guys sign at 12:01, like a minute after the midnight deadline. You know, in the NFL, it seems like 4 hours into free agency, the top 10 to 15 free agents are already off the board. I really think that baseball would benefit if they added a deadline in free agency. I don't know if the Players Association, I don't know if agents would like that, but it would create more palpable excitement. It would kind of act like the trade deadline does. And the trade deadline is one of the most fun periods of the baseball calendar in terms of, you know, fan interest and engagement.
A deadline would be awesome. It would be great. I'm not sure the union would ever go for that. It would have to be collectively bargained. You know, they're very cognizant and leery of anything that could be a drag on salaries. And if that could be perceived or as a drag on salaries, I think the union would fight it. But like I said, some of their brethren, you know, are getting dragged into this whirlpool, and we're a month from spring training, and there's a handful of very good players that don't know where they're going to be in a month. I would think that would concern the union as much as salaries and setting new financial record for the quote unquote elite free agent.
Okay, we got to finish up with Mike Trout because we got about 40 questions about Mike Trout, even though this is the Bryce Harper, Manny Machado free agent period. So I'll just take this one as a sample. This comes from Craig Grove. How soon after the free agency dust settles do the Phillies make a serious play for Mike Trout? The Angels soon have to realize he's not going to sign an extension, don't they? So start with you, Jim.
I would call them tomorrow and say, what do you want from Mike Trout? And then they'll hang up the phone and say, we're not trading Mike Trout, but at least you've planted the seed. And this is a big year. What does he get, 2 years left?
Yeah.
If they're not in it this year, don't sign him to an extension. I think you could see him dangled next winter. Regardless if it's a trade or free agent, the Phillies are going to be very intrigued by the opportunity of acquiring the best player in baseball, and they will be in the mix. They absolutely will be in the mix for Mike Trout if he ever becomes available.
My opinion on the Mike Trout situation, I've said this for a while now, I just do not see the Angels trading him, ever. That doesn't mean that I think that he's going to sign his next contract with the Angels, but the way I look at it is this. If you trade Mike Trout, say, next season at the trade deadline, when he has just a half a year remaining under contract, are you going to get a return 5 years from now can be the core of your team, that can be the core of a championship team? Maybe, maybe not. So it's not like if you trade Mike Trout for a group of prospects, you're guaranteeing that you're going to win in the future.
I've always felt the same way that, you know, if I'm their owner, Arte Moreno, I don't want to be the guy who traded Mickey Mantle. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be the guy that, you know, I want Mike Trout with me for the entire career and going to Cooperstown with an A on it, that. But, you know, Mike Trout has some say here. You know, he has say here. He doesn't have to sign an extension. And if you get the impression, or if he looks you in the eye and say, I'm not signing an extension, you do have to try to get something for him rather than just some compensatory draft pick.
And as our old pal Rob Kestner of NBC10 mentioned to me when he also wanted to know about Trout, he brought up the possibility that if the Angels do eventually reach that point where they're willing to trade him, could the Phillies be a favorite because they, in addition to having prospects, might possibly have the financial muscle to take on Albert Pujols' remaining contract, which is kind of an intriguing thought because you would think that the Angels would have interest in clearing that albatross off of their books if they do eventually trade Trout. But again, it's just so hard to project because this, like you said, this is the Mickey Mantle of his time. If you don't get what's perceived as an amazing return, the fan base is going to hold that against you for the rest of your career, you know, if you even are there a couple years from now still as the GM. So, my opinion, too early to tell. But,
too early to tell, but, you know, I hear a lot of folks saying, well, they only want to get one Machado or Harper because they're budgeting for Mike Trout. You know, I don't necessarily buy that because you don't know that Mike Trout's ever going to be available. And if he does become available, he is such a unique circumstance that you change all budgets and all plans on the fly and you do what you have to do to sign him.
Absolutely. All right, that'll do it for this edition of At the Yard. For Jim Salisbury, I'm Corey Seidman, and we'll be doing one of these pretty soon because whether or not Manny Machado and Bryce Harper sign in the coming days or even by, you know, 2 weeks from now, there's still going to be a lot to digest as this free agent process rolls along. So thanks for listening. Catch you next time.